So we are in the midst of a series where we're looking at circles. We've been growing from the inside out, talking about our personal life, making a difference in my personal life, and connected with that was a little series on Bible study and kind of a different type of series, just giving us some tools on how to study and how we can use that. And then that fell right into making a difference in our family, where we've been this month, and then we'll continue to grow as the circles grow out from there in the logo. So we are talking about making a difference in our family, and this is the last Sunday on that. Next week, we start on making a difference in the next circle out, which is our school and our work, for those of us, you know, those who are in school and those who are in the workforce. And so that is the next circle out. But today is the last series, our last sermon in the series on family. And today's message is, how many families do we have? So let's write this down. Family number one. The family we were born into. You can't choose where you were born or who you were born to. You can't. That wasn't up to you. So that's... it just amazes me how much that matters to other people looking at others, you know, nationality or all the race stuff that we've got in America right now. I didn't choose to be born to my parents. That's who God gave me. And, you know, whatever color God painted you, that's who you are. And it's just, it's amazing to me. And this is a little bit of a side step here. Just where we're at in our country with this, this should have been long gone, long, especially for Christians. But today's focus is a little different than that, that you can't choose where you came from. You can't choose a family that you were born into, where you came from, who you are. Let's write this down. Be grateful. Be grateful if you were born into a family that calls Christ Lord. Be grateful. Last week, we talked about Timothy's environment growing up, Paul's Timothy, and that Timothy was raised in an environment that he had the influence of his mother Eunice and his grandmother Lois. And we saw that influence that they had on him, that Timothy had a sincere faith that was in him. Why? Because it was in his mother, because it was in his grandmother. And Timothy was exposed to the scriptures as an infant. As I think the NAS translates that verse. As a young boy, Timothy was shown the usefulness of the God-breathed scriptures from his mom and from his grandmother. That was his environment. What was your environment like? Was that your environment? Was that the environment you grew up in, where God's commandments in the Bible were the foundation of the principles and the values and the morals that you were raised with? Was that your environment? A mom and dad that viewed you as a blessing from God. Your father viewed you as an arrow in his quiver, that verse we looked at a few weeks ago. You received a sense of value based on a God-centered truth that you are valuable, and your parents passed that on to you. They put that in you. A mom and a dad who shared their faith in God with you because it was in them first. Was that your environment? If you have any of this in your past environment, in the family you came from, the family you were raised with, then let me encourage you to repeat the good patterns your parents exemplified for you. Repeat those good patterns. If there were good patterns in your past, there were some good things that your parents did, repeat those things. But maybe that wasn't the case for you. Unfortunately, that's the reality. Maybe your family life growing up was quite different. And if that's the case, then let me share this with you this morning, that if you come from a hostile or a hazardous family, you do not have to repeat their pattern. You do not have to repeat their pattern. I cannot imagine some of the horrors that some people grew up in. And I've heard stories of different people's home environment, either growing up or some that are current. There are some awful environments out there. And if you came from one of those, if that was the environment that you had growing up, then let me say, I am so very sorry that you had to see the things that you saw or feel the things that you felt or experience the things that you experienced or hear what your ears heard. But let me encourage you this morning that you do not have to repeat what you saw growing up. You do not have to repeat that pattern. And that's a lot easier said than done, because we tend to follow the pattern of our parents and the living environment that we grew up in. That's what we tend to do. That's our tendency, is we tend to follow that pattern. Whatever environment you were raised in, whatever that first family was, we tend to follow that pattern. Good or bad, we tend to repeat that. God knew this, and he warned that this would typically be the case. Children would repeat the sin pattern of their parents. And the warning here is actually found in the Ten Commandments. I'm going to Deuteronomy's version of the Ten Commandments, and I like the way the New Living Translation here does this. When you get a paraphrased version of the Bible, they have to translate a little bit to make it simpler. And I like the way they've translated this. We'll look at why I didn't use the NIV or the NAS does a good job of trying to find a balance between the two. Deuteronomy 5, 8 through 10 says, "You must not make for yourself an idol of any kind or an image of anything in the heavens or of the earth or in the sea. You must not bow to them or worship them, for I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God and will not tolerate your affections for any other gods. I lay the sins of the parents upon their children. The entire family is affected, even children in the third and fourth generations of those who reject me. But I lavish unfailing love for 1,000 generations on those who love me and obey my commandments." So right here in the Big Ten, in the Ten Commandments, God acknowledges that this is the tendency, that this is what happens, that these patterns that are passed down from the parent to the child, the children imitate those. They follow those patterns. They tend to repeat the pattern that they were raised in. They tend to repeat the environment that they were raised in. Even to the third and fourth generations, as God says there in the Ten Commandments. This recognition of that these patterns are repeated, it's not saying that the children are being punished for the sins of their parents, though that's why I didn't use the NIV. The NIV translates it in a way that would make us think that this was the case. Here's how the NIV says this: it's punishing the children for the sins of the parents to the third and fourth generations of those who hate me. And that's not exactly what the text there is getting at, and that doesn't quite agree with other passages. The key phrase there that we need to pick up on the NIV and the NAS there is "of those who hate me." There's that clause, that connection. These children are repeating this pattern of these parents who lived a life of worshiping idols that was a representation of their hate towards God. That's how God took it. That's how personal that is to God. "Of those who hate me," to even the third and fourth generations, they continued the sin pattern of their parents. They continued to hate God by worshiping idols. There are many places in the Bible where it talks about how our sin is the responsibility of the individual. Of those places, one is just chapters away from this passage we just read in Deuteronomy chapter 5. If you turn a few chapters to Deuteronomy chapter 24, we read this, and it's very plain, very clear. Parents are not to be put to death for their children, nor children to put to death for their parents. Each will die for their own sin. The parents are responsible for their own actions and choices and actions, as well as the children are responsible for theirs. So the children of the third and fourth generations, they're being punished not because of the sin of their parents, but because they are continuing the sin pattern that their parents showed them, "of those who hate me." They're following the pattern of the sin of their parents that they exemplified for them. So if you came from a hostile or hazardous home environment growing up, the tendency is going to be to repeat those patterns, but you don't have to, and you should not. You have to understand that repeating that is going to be a natural course. You're going to have to do something different. You're going to have to work. Let's write this down. If you came from a hostile or hazardous home environment, growing up, break the chain. Break the chain with your generation. Do not be the third and fourth generation or the second generation, wherever that sin pattern occurred in your history. Maybe it wasn't your parents. Maybe it was your parents' parents, and your parents didn't break the chain very well. They tried, but they didn't. It's up to you. Don't repeat those patterns. Break the chain, and I know that's much easier said than done, and I'm trying to be very sensitive to that. But there's a lot of truth in that. That if you continue in those patterns, you're going to continue in those results. And you don't want the results because you know what the results feel like. Break the chain. Let God help you. Let him step in and break the chain. Decide for yourself that it will be different with my life, with my family, with my generation. You don't have to follow the pattern. If it was a hostile and hazardous environment to you, you can provide a completely different environment for your children and your family. And you have to decide that it will be different. You have to commit that your children are going to be raised in a home that calls Christ Lord. Psalm 127, we read, this is where the arrows and quiver passage happened at the very verses away from these. But the first two verses of that say, unless the Lord builds the house, unless the Lord builds the house, unless who? The Lord. Unless the Lord builds the house, they labor in vain who build it. Unless the Lord guards the city, the watchman keeps awake in vain. It is vain for you to rise up early, to retire late, to eat the bread of painful labors, for he gives to his beloved even in his sleep. Write this down. This is family number two. The family we create. That's family number two. The family we create when we leave our parents, when we leave our father and mother, and we marry. And in this family, we all must commit that your children will be raised in a home that calls Christ Lord. This is the family you're creating. This is the family you're in charge of. We have a history we come from. All of us have that. All of us have family number one. And there's going to be a mix of good and bad no matter what that environment was. You take the good, you repeat the good, you stop repeating the bad. That's how you take a step forward. That's how you move forward. And as you're creating your family, we have to commit that your children will be raised in a home that calls Christ Lord. Commit to letting the Lord build your house so that you don't labor in vain. Commit that your children will be raised in a house that calls Christ Lord. As Joshua said, if serving the Lord seems undesirable to you, then choose for yourselves this day whom you will serve, whether the gods your ancestors served beyond the Euphrates, or the gods of the Amorites in the land in whose land you are living. But as for me and my household, this is what every one of us need to say this morning. And if you've said it before, it needs to be something that you recommit to today. As for me and my household, that's the household you're responsible for. Family member two is that household that you are in process of creating. As for me and my household, we will serve the Lord. Commit to a house that calls Christ Lord. With that, that's a home that puts great value on following God's commandment. Commit to that. A home that puts great value on following God's commandments. God's word is the authority for our life, and it is being devalued as the authority. We have to hang on to that, church. It has to be the family, the authority in our family. What it says goes. Commit to raising your kids in that environment where they know that you bow to God's commandments and you teach that's what we do, that the Bible is the authority, that to God we show our obedience, that he has our allegiance. That's the environment you want to show. Commit that's going to be the environment you bring. Let them see that in your life, and let God's commandments be the set of house rules that your house operates on. A home that's foundation is built on principles of morality modeled after God's holiness. Morality is slipping away. Oh, we're too far behind. Let's go to the next one. So this is the one we just said. A home that puts great value on following God's commands. Hopefully you got that. If not, you'll get a neighbor. Find a neighbor that wrote fast. Second one is a home that's foundation is built on the principles of morality modeled after God's holiness. Morality is slipping away more and more. We've talked about this in this series. How morality is slipping away more and more in our society. Because people are not building their values on solid principles. We are watching a nation full of people who are building their house on sand. Don't be that person. That's not for us, church. We build our house on a foundation that's built on principles of morality that model God's holiness. That's where we get our values. That's where we get our principles. From an unchanging, holy, amazing, awesome God. That's where we get it. Love what God loves. Hate what God hates. Be saddened over the things that sadden him. Be excited over the things that he gets excited about. A home that's foundation is built on the principles of morality modeled after God's holiness. A home that loves God and loves others through acts of generosity and service. I tell you what, we have a church that is about that. We have a praying church, no doubt about that. There's amazing things that we see as this church prays. And I think that's one of our gifted areas as a church, is the gift of prayer. One of the other areas that our church excels in, and it's not a pat on the back, but I want to lift us all up. This is something that our church does well. We give. We have 29 families that we're going to be making a difference in. We have how many baskets, how many supplies, boxes of supplies, Dawn? Is it $1,200 buying? Do you remember? 40. 40 kids we're making a difference on, or in their life on August 15th through the back-to-school giveaway. We have children in Haiti that we can now support through the online thing. We've got a handful of things in the bulletin of different places we can help and serve. We just painted next door and helped out the school there. Don't let that just be something you do here at church. Let that be something that happens in your home. A home that loves God and loves others through acts of generosity and service. The Bible is very clear that there is a direct connection to loving God and serving. That there is a direct connection to loving God and doing for other people. Commit to have a home environment where those two are always viewed as connected. Always viewed as connected to each other. To love is to serve. And to serve is to love. A home that invites God's building and blessings. That's our next one. A home that invites God's building and blessings. If you are the architect and the contractor of your household, then you need to step aside and you need to let God build your house. You need to let God be the one who's in charge of the building plans. You need to let him be in charge of the construction. It's like those old bumper stickers that used to say, God is my co-pilot. You remember seeing those? I don't see those as much anymore. Probably because people understood the theological error there. If God is sitting in your passenger seat and you're driving, you're in the wrong seat. He needs to be driving. He needs to be in charge of how your home is built. Let him build your home. Let him show you what he wants in your family. Invite God's blessings by being open to his leading. Be faithful to where he leads you as a family. Be faithful to what he wants you to do in your family, with your family. Whatever faith risks that takes, take it, step out. That's where you see the blessings of God on your family. That's how you invite the blessings of God in, to walk by faith and not by sight. If you walk by sight, you're going to get the blessings that you're going to give your family. And those might be great. But how much greater would be the blessings that would come from God? So you can choose. If you walk by sight, you can bless your family in your own way, or you can walk by faith and let God bless your family in his way. I choose the second. Those are a whole lot better than what I can give my kids and my family. Dads, moms, husbands, and wives, listen closely. Together, you set the environment for your household. Together, you decide the climate. Let me use a physical illustration to illustrate a spiritual principle. In the winter at our house, our thermostat is set at 67. In the summer, our thermostat is set at 76. Those are temperatures that my wife and I agreed on. We agreed a little more when she was pregnant, because I'm kind of a hot-natured person, so we kind of kept things a little cooler when she was pregnant. But those are the temperatures we've agreed on. That's what we set it at. Sometimes in the summer, we'll splurge, and we'll knock it down to 75. Ooh, that blast of cold air for a few minutes, that feels so good. And our compressor sounding like it has rocks in it right now. Or sometimes we'll splurge in the winter, and we'll kick it up to 68. So cozy. But we set the temperature in our house. When I visit my parents in the South, North Carolina, down there, they like it warmer, like a lot warmer, like 80 plus degrees in their house. Summer and winter, even when you're there in the winter, it's just like, woo, it's hot. How are you guys affording this? In the summer, it's really, really warm down there. Am I in charge of the thermostat in my parents' house? No. No, I just walk around half naked with a sweatband around my forehead. And I hope they get the hint. You know? I'm just kidding. I don't wear the sweatband. That would be over the top. But parents, listen up. Connect this physical example to your spiritual responsibility. You set the spiritual climate for your household. You set the emotional environment. You set the standards that will be expected in your house. That's your job, moms and dads, husbands and wives. That's your responsibility. If you're looking around your house and you're not happy with your environment, with the environment that you have there, if you're not comfortable with the climate, then do something about it. It's your house. Family number two. It's the house you're in charge of. It's the house you are creating. Then it's up to you to change the temperature. And I'm not talking about a thermostat on the wall. I'm talking about a mental, emotional, spiritual, psychological thermostat inside you. Between you and your spouse. You make the decisions that change the environment. You have to take responsibility over that. Husbands, specifically, we talked at the beginning of the series about how you are the spiritual head of the household. You are to lead your wife and family closer to God and in a God-centered environment. You are to lead out. You are to be the chief example. You are to be the first model of biblical standards in your house. Your family will not go where you cannot lead them. Husbands. But dads, you aren't alone in this. Moms, you aren't alone in this. Kids, you aren't alone in this either. We have a third family. Ephesians chapter 2 says, "So then you are no longer strangers and aliens, but you are fellow citizens with the saints and are of God's household." Everyone say God's household. "Having been built on the foundation of the apostles and prophets, Christ Jesus himself being the cornerstone, in whom the whole building being fitted together is growing into a holy temple in the Lord." Peter talks about how we are living stones being built together. I love that picture he creates. "In whom you also are being built together into a dwelling of God in the Spirit." Let's write this down. Family number three. The church. The church family we gain when we give our life to God. That's family number three. The church family we have when we give our life to God. 1 Corinthians 3:9 says, "For we are God's Fellow workers, you are God's field, God's building, God's household. We need. It's not just a bonus. It's not just a want. It's not just something, you know, it's Jimmy's on top of your ice cream. We need the support and influence of our church family. I do not know how people do it without a church family. The church is an amazing thing that God has designed and planned and put here. If your first family was a hostile or hazardous environment, and you're wanting to break the chains, you're trying to break the chains and make a difference with the family you've created, your second family, you have this third family to help. You want to have groups together, friends together, coming together and learning that not you're not the only one that struggles with some of the things you struggle with. You're not the only one that comes from environment. You're not the only person that's trying to break the chains of their past and their history. You're here with a bunch of people who are doing the same thing, and there's strength to be found in that. You have a third family that can help you break the chains if that's what you're wanting to do today. If your first family was good, that's awesome. And you were raised in a God-centered environment, a home that was centered on God's values and morals and his principles. But you're not doing such a great job with family number two. You had a great example. You had a great pattern to follow. But something just isn't quite working with family number two. If you have family number three, we have the support and the influence of a church family. Not just the history of a good family, but you have people in your life right now in a church family that can help you with family number two. Where would you be without family number three? We need family number three. We need it. No matter what scenario you are in, if the first family is bad and the second family is going to be a struggle because the first family was rough, where do you get the support or the influence to break those chains? It's in the third family. If the first family is good, but you're not doing a great job with family number two, where are you going to get the influence, the support to make that difference in family number two? It comes from family number three. Being surrounded by other families that are working at it. If both the first and the second family were good, and if you don't have this third family, how are you going to make it even better? How are you going to prove any better? We have three families. You can't control the one you came from. You can only make decisions on how we're going to allow that environment to inspire us. In simple, be conscious that we have a tendency to follow the pattern we experienced growing up. Repeat the good, don't repeat the bad. It's very simple. As dads and moms, husbands and wives, you have a second family that you created when you left your mom and dad and created your own family, and you are in charge of the environment of that second family. Make good decisions here. Let God be the builder and blesser of your household. Commit to lead your household as one. Lead your household as a household that calls Christ Lord and lives that out. Your children will have a tendency to follow the pattern you give them when they create their second family. You give them the best experience they can have. You give them the best example they can have. So that when they're going for family number two, they have your family, the one that your family number two, to be the best example it can be. And our third family right here. We need this family. The Bible talks about, you know, don't neglect meeting together. Don't neglect, and this is just one area where this is such a big deal. We need this family to help overcome any bad examples in our past or any bad decisions in our presence. In our present, we need this family to support us through tough times and encourage us through the good ones. We need the good examples found in our church family to help inspire good decisions and how our individual families are run. So bringing this whole series to an end, looking at just three families that we have. Three families each.